The senior U.S. arms control official has said that Iran's missile program is destabilizing the Middle East. She's also said that Iranian missiles raise the risk of a regional arms race to the provision of such weapons to arms groups in Lebanon and Yemen. In this edition of the debate, we will look at how the U.S. can accuse Iran that its missiles create instability when the U.S. is the number one country to sell the most weapons to countries in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia.
The United States says Iran's missile program is destabilizing the Middle East, accusing Tehran of raising the risks of a regional arms race.
Iran's missile program is a key contributor to increased tensions and destabilization in the region, increasing the risk of a regional arms race.
Iran says its missile program is a crucial part of its defense strategy. Tehran says it stretches back to the Iraqi-imposed war on Iran, when the world sold Saddam Hussein billions of dollars of weapons, including chemical weapons. The Islamic Republic argues it was prevented from purchasing barbed wire. Tehran says no other country has dared to wage a war against it since the Iraqi war, given Tehran's defense power.
Does Iran have the right to defend itself? And if we have the right to defend ourselves, do we do it with swords?
In 2018, the United States sold $55.6 billion worth of weapons to its allies, showing a massive 33% or $14 billion increase over 2017. Over half of all U.S. arms exports, 52%, went to countries in the Middle East. According to a prominent think tank, arms sales to the Middle East have surged by 87% over the past 5 years. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute says Saudi Arabia has become the biggest arms importer in the world. The US and the UK are selling scores of warplanes and advanced bombs to Riyadh, bombs that are landing on the heads of women and children in Yemen. According to SIPRI, Iran accounted for less than 1% of the arms imports into the Middle East.
There's no control of arms in the United States. There's no control of arms in terms of its exports, not just to Saudi Arabia, but to many other despotic regimes across the Middle East and across the world.
Iran does not hide from the fact it provides missiles to resistance movements in the region. These include Lebanon's Hezbollah and Gaza-based Palestinian resistance group Hamas. Iran argues both are defending their territories from atrocities, occupation, and war crimes committed by Israel. The United Nations and rights groups have repeatedly condemned Israel for crimes it's committed against the Palestinians. Western nations are in fact flooding the Middle East region with weapons, disregarding their human rights violations. Rights groups accuse the U.S. of selling billions of dollars worth of arms to Israel, Saudi Arabia, and other Persian Gulf monarchies who have waged several wars in the past recent years alone.
$25 million, that's peanuts for you.
Our guest joining us for this edition of the debate, journalist and political commentator Richard Silverstein, joins us from Seattle. And we have publisher and editor at Politics First, Marcus Papadopoulos, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. I'd like to start with you, Richard Silverstein. This is the first accusation that the U.S. has leveled against Iran. Iran's missile program is destabilizing the Middle East. Can you tell us how it is doing that, if you agree with that?
Well, of course, I don't agree with that, and nor is this the first time the United States has made such a statement. It's been doing so for several years, at least. And it's important to remember that the JCPOA, with the nuclear deal, only dealt with the issue of potential Iranian nuclear program. It did not deal with ballistic missiles. It did not deal with anything other than uranium enrichment and Iran's uranium and nuclear facilities. So the idea that we're going to all of a sudden move the goalposts and start talking about Iran's missile program as like the most dangerous thing happening in the Middle East is preposterous. We've, as your story mentioned, the United States is peddling hundreds of billions of dollars worth of armaments during Donald Trump's first trip to Saudi Arabia, which was the very first trip he ever took as president. He boasted that Saudi Arabia had made commitments to buy $110 billion worth of U.S. arms. So in addition to the U.S. arms, we have Israel selling arms and helping Iran's enemies in the region. And the destabilization is really far more prevalent among the U.S., the Western allies, and Israel, and the Saudi and Sunni states of the region rather than Iran.
Okay, let's listen to one of the statements that Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif has made in a recent Munich Security Conference that was held in Germany. Let's take a listen.
The debate. Only on Press TV.
Does Iran have to simply lie dead because some people don't want us to be able to defend ourselves?
The UN Security Council resolution behind the Iran nuclear deal called on Iran not to develop ballistic missiles.
No.
So we're talking about it.
My friend, I negotiated 2231, so yes. I know every word of it. It called upon Iran. It didn't demand Iran.
It did not, call on Iran, yes.
Not to develop, so it's something different, not to develop ballistic missiles that are designed to be capable. Every word of it took months to negotiate, designed to be capable to carry nuclear weapons. We don't design any of our missiles to be capable to carry nuclear weapons because we don't have nuclear weapons. So none of the Security Council nonsense. The Europeans know it, the Russians know it, even the Americans know it. The Americans have testified before Congress when the deal was on that it's not about missiles per se. It's about missiles designed to carry nuclear, to be capable of carrying nuclear weapons.
Just what they're saying now.
We negotiated forever. But let's wait a second. Problem is, nobody is selling us a single fighter jet. Nobody. How are we supposed to defend ourselves? When we were attacked by French Exocet missiles, by German chemical weapons, by Russian MiG fighters, by British tanks, by American AWACS surveillance, who came to our assistance? Why, when our people were being showered with missiles, with Iraqi missiles, nobody gave us a means of defense, either air defense or missiles to retaliate? No one. We had to beg. Now, I am not going, for the pleasure of my friend, Minister Lodrian, or anybody else, to make our people defenseless so that the next Saddam Hussein in our region could rise up and kill our people without the means of our defense. We still have people who cannot breathe in Iran because of the chemical weapons that were provided to Iraq from Europe. If we were to negotiate about armaments, Europe has a lot to respond to. Europe is not going to be in the Inquisition seat. Europe will be asked why it supported Saddam Hussein.
Okay,
why
we can't go back into
the bombing in
let's
Yemen.
Not go.
The debate. Only on Press TV.
Well, that was Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif. And Marcus Papadopoulos, this question to you based on what you saw, your reaction to the Foreign Minister of Iran there. And of course, at the heart of it is that Iran cannot be left defenseless if countries like the U.S. want that to be taken away from Iran.
Look, the American allegation against Iran that Iran is a great force for instability in the Middle East is laughable, is nonsensical, and is utterly ridiculous. The problem, however, and this is something that viewers of this discussion need to be very well aware of, is that for the last four decades, Iran has been maligned to such an extent in the West that politicians and journalists in both America and Britain are free to level any accusation against Iran, even though they don't have an ounce of concrete evidence to corroborate their assertion. So the reality is that Iran's voice, the truth, is never heard in America and Britain. If we just take how Iran has actually been a force for good, for stability in the Middle East. First of all, it is Iran that prevented the cancerous tentacles of the Taliban from extending from Afghanistan into the Middle East. Iran, therefore, was an effective buffer against the Taliban. Iran has helped to fight and defeat terrorism in Syria. Now, these are two very, very significant pieces of information that the ordinary man and woman in America and in Britain is not going to be aware of. Conversely, let's have a look at the role of America in the Middle East. America is the country who assisted and allowed Israel to develop nuclear weapons. Now, how on earth is a country in the Middle East having nuclear weapons conducive to the region's stability? It is America under Donald Trump and his predecessors who have concluded contracts worth billions of dollars with Saudi Arabia. So within the first few months of Trump's presidency, he traveled to Saudi Arabia. He concluded arms contracts with Saudi Arabia to the tune of $500 billion. It is Saudi Arabia, backed by America and also Britain, that is waging, as I speak now, a horrific war in Yemen, which is adding to the instability of the region. So it is actually America and its allies in the region, Saudi Arabia and Israel, which are the force for instability in the Middle East. It is not Iran. Iran actually has sought regional stability, even trying to talk with Riyadh. But of course, Riyadh will not entertain any prospect of talking to Iran. Why? Because it suits the interests of Saudi Arabia and Israel and for America for there to be instability in the Middle East, for the Americans to be able to instigate wars there, because that means there's a massive arms market for American weapons. And by dividing people in the Middle East, it's the old tactic, divide and rule.
Okay. Richard Silverstein, when we take a look at the stats, I have to throw this in, and that's the U.S. arms sales, which you actually covered a bit in your opening statements. I mean, for decades now, from the year, from the 50s up till now, 1950 to the year 2017, you're looking at over close to $700 billion worth of arms that the U.S. has sold to the middle around the world, the number one seller of arms, the U.S. being to the Middle East. And looking at it, it's led by Saudi Arabia, the biggest buyer, and of course, we need to mention Israel there too. Why don't those two countries come under scrutiny, especially, for example, Saudi Arabia, in which 15 of the 19 hijackers of the 9/11 attacks were from Saudi Arabia?
Well, I think that's what we're trying to do here, and that's certainly what I try to do in my journalism and my political blogging, is to bring up those points to American readers and English-speaking readers who read what I produce. Yes, it's very important that people understand the destabilizing role that America plays. We have supported the Saudi attack on Yemen, although our Congress is waking up somewhat from its slumber and has passed a resolution recently denouncing the U.S. Role in supporting that attack on Yemen. But I would like to see the Congress, which controls the revenue and spending, to actually cut off any military aid that might be going to Saudi Arabia that could be used against Yemen. And that so far hasn't happened. I also wanted to mention Israel's nuclear capability. Israel not only has somewhere around 200 nuclear warheads, it has Jericho 3 ballistic missiles that can not just reach Iran, but can reach anywhere, virtually anywhere in the world. So if we're talking about destabilizing the Middle East, Israel is one of the prime forces doing that. And we're not even talking about the role that it plays in targeted assassinations against leaders, military commanders, both Syrian Hezbollah and Iran in Syria and other types of assassinations that it's engaged in, which certainly are intended by Israel to destabilize the region. So what I would like to see is for all the parties to sit down and negotiate their way out of these issues, which is what happened with the nuclear deal. If the West wants to come in and say that Iran's ballistic missiles are destabilizing, well, let's talk about how all the other destabilizing forces are at work in the region, and let's negotiate a reduction in those missiles so that Iran doesn't have to feel threatened by the missiles that are pointed at it. Until the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are willing, and Israel are willing, to negotiate, say, a nuclear-free zone in the Middle East, a reduction in missile proliferation, then they're all total hypocrites, in my opinion.
Iran has called for a nuclear-free Middle East, Marcus Papadopoulos. But let's take a look at one of the things that Iran's foreign minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said in that first soundbite that we played, and that was the fact that Iran needs its missiles in order to defend itself. Looking at the U.S. bases that surround Iran in the region, massive troop presence. Some estimates had put it at 125,000. That may have been scaled down. There's dozens of U.S. Military installations in the region, from Oman to UAE and Kuwait to Turkey and even Israel, when you take a look at the U.S. military bases. And, of course, there comes the famous "all options are on the table" that successive U.S. administrations have leveled against Iran. How does the U.S. feel that it can take that away from Iran when it's doing the points that I just made are applied to Iran in that case?
Ultimately, the American allegation against Iran centers on two points. Number one, the Americans have never forgiven the Iranian people for having overthrown the Shah and for having returned Iran's independence and sovereignty, because Iran, during the days, during the years of the Shah, was a vassal state of America. And the Americans have been doing everything at their disposal over the last 40 years to try and ruin Iran, especially to try and asphyxiate the Iranian economy. So that is a very important point, because Iran today worships God. The Americans want Iran to worship America, to worship the dollar. The next point is that it is only human nature that if someone is constantly threatening you, you are going to defend yourself. Every American president since Jimmy Carter has made very, very aggressive arguments against Iran. They have supported terrorist attacks against Iran. And now we have Trump in the White House, who, in my opinion, represents an opportunity in a lifetime for those on Capitol Hill who want to overthrow the Iranian government and who want to destroy the Iranian revolution. He is arming Saudi Arabia to the teeth, and Saudi Arabia doesn't conceal the fact that it wants to destroy the Iranian government. It wants to destroy the Iranian revolution. Therefore, action, reaction. The Iranians have developed a very strong military, which is well within their rights, in accordance with the United Nations Charter, to defend Iran, to defend the Iranian people. Are the Iranians developing missiles, especially long-range missiles? Yes, they are, and they have every right to do so. It is completely justified, because just take a map out of the Middle East and you will see that Iran is surrounded, is threatened by very hostile forces, from Israel to Saudi Arabia to the many American military bases in the region. And the American politicians, They go on television and they openly say, we want to overthrow the Iranian government. Well, what else do you expect the Iranian government to do? To sit back and allow another country to invade their country and subdue them? No. The Iranians are a proud people and they are going to fight for the independence and freedom of the Iranian people. And in that, I fully support them.
Well, let's take a listen before we go to you, Richard Silverstein, to the Iranian foreign minister's second statement in this debate. Let's take a listen.
The debate. The debate. The debate. Only on Press TV.
I ask you a question. Does Iran have the right to defend itself? And if we have the right to defend ourselves, do we do it with swords? Do we do it with whatever, guns? Or do we need sophisticated means of defense? The most sophisticated means of warfare are being sold to our region, and President Trump conveniently calls them beautiful military equipment. Now, we're not getting any of those beautiful military equipment, the beautiful military equipment the Yemenis are getting. Mm. They're being killed with it.
Okay.
I don't think they call it beautiful.
Let's.
The debate. The debate. The debate. Only on Press TV.
There you have it, the Iranian foreign minister at that Munich Security Conference. Richard Silverstein, your reaction to that?
Well, I would like to add to the discussion we've talked about, your other guests talked about regime change, and the Trump administration, as opposed to the Obama administration, has really made that the watchword of its policy toward Iran. You have John Bolton and Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, explicitly talking about overthrowing the Iranian regime, which is an insane notion. The fact that the highest levels of the U.S. government are talking about intervening in Iran, overthrowing its government, installing some sort of puppet regime in its place, and gathering its military allies, the Saudis, the Israelis, and whatever, to attack Iran, is actually literally insane. And the rest of the world will not stand for it, but there seems to be some sort of mental delusion that's affecting the U.S. government in this policy. It's something that will wreck the region, cause a huge conflagration, and this type of behavior, this type of rhetoric, is what destabilizes the region. Instead of having all the parties sit down and talk and negotiate agreements. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, we're unfortunately out of time. Thank you very much for that. Richard Silverstein, journalist and political commentator. And thank you, publisher and editor at Politics First, Marcus Papadopoulos. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Covid Halfway and the entire team in the Capitol, Saffron, it's goodbye.